The question was asked if a person does Giyu or a person is just now learning about Judaism and they don't really have a custom from the home. Are they obligated to what their grandparents once did, or where their mother comes from? Technically, minhag is something that we discuss it as something that's continued, meaning you live in a community, you do the minhagim of that community. You grow up in a family, you continue the minhagim of the family. The second there's a breach, if a person's parents, grandparents, they haven't been doing anything, or a person's newborn, he's becoming a ger, he's starting from scratch. So technically he's not obligated to the history of the family, to the roots that they once lived in Ashkenaz, but they've been living in LA for the last three generations. So what? LA is Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz literally means Germany. I didn't realize, you know, we have so many people here from LA tonight. Okay, so technically a person isn't obligated to that minhag. So what's one to do? One of the beautiful things at Machon Meir is that we strive for normalcy. Amen. The older you get, the more rare you'll find normalcy being. It sounds funny, but it's true. You know, everyone says they're normal and everyone else is fanatics. So we also say we're normal. But the truth is that we do strive for normalcy. And part of normalcy is that people don't look at you as queer. Now, at this stage of your life, you're transient. You're with Machon Meir for this year, and then the next 3 years you're somewhere else, and then after that somewhere else, and until you build a family, so technically you don't yet know where you'll land. As you learn more about the different customs, so it might happen that you feel you connect more and you have an easier time with certain customs. The trick would be to take on one custom. Not to say, well, in this climate, it makes sense to be like the Yemenites. So I'm going to walk around in a long robe. And this custom, it also makes sense to be like the Yemenites. So I'm going to shave my head aside from my pates. But then again, in this climate, you don't eat as often. So maybe I'll wait 6 hours between meat and milk. Or maybe, you know, nowadays that they sell so many snacks, it makes more sense to wait 1 hour like the Dutch. So I'll wait 1 hour. Now, when it comes to Nusach, well, let's see. There's a lot to be said there, and today with our platas, so I have to think, Sephardi or Ashkenazi, which way I'm going to go.
What were those last two things you said? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
I don't remember anymore.
Nusach,
when it comes to prayer. So are you going to go like this, Sephard, Ashkenaz, Hasidim, and within Hasidim there are different types of Hasidic davening, I connect more to the bells tunes. But then again, when I go to the bells shul with my long robe, it doesn't work. So maybe I'll wear a fur hat with my long robe. You guys are laughing. I'm telling you true stories. I'm telling you what guys who left Machon Meir ended up doing. So you had a guy who was walking with a long robe wearing a bell's hat because that's what he connected with. And you can imagine the stares he got walking in the city streets. What? The fur hat, the Shtreimel. Right, but he was wearing a white coat like the Yemenites.
Oh.
And he was also he also wanted to be like the Yemenites, so he wore his talis three tefillot a day. So you come to Ma'ariv Friday night on Shabbos, and he's coming with his hat, his long white robe, and a talis. So his wife calls me up and says, "Could you talk to him?"
So, I understand that there's all these customs and all these, you know, the different communities and stuff like that. It is pretty hilarious. I understand that. But like, isn't that kind of these sort of things, like with Israel, you know, getting older, you know, the state of Israel getting older and all, everyone, you know, kind of coming back, that these things are kind of inevitable, that there's going to be a lot more crossing over, I mean, in blending of traditions. I mean,
it's fine, but
maybe not as day and night as what he's doing, but like,
I can tell you that I've never seen it. No one ever saw someone like him.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. I tried talking to him. We were very good friends.
Yeah.
So he explained to me the logic behind every step of the way.
Yeah.
And he said, this is how he connects to God. And I said, yeah, but people are looking and talking and your wife's uncomfortable. So he said, I daven in a shul, it's very far away. What does she care? No one knows her. No one knows me. I'm telling you real conversations. So today you guys are laughing. But the truth is that let's strive for normalcy. So when at this point, you don't have to bind yourself to one way. But whichever way you'll go, go fully with that way. Don't look at it and say, well, I'll go Satmar, but it doesn't make sense to have these hats in this weather. I'm going to get a straw hat. You go Satmar, go all the way Satmar. Don't show up with a cowboy hat to the Satmar shore. No, that makes sense. So I'm saying, a person could say, well, what's the difference? The halacha simply says another covering on the head. Come on, I'm just as pious as them. They're doing something silly. Back in Poland, they wore fur here in the sun. Come on. So I'm quoting a few arguments I had with people. So that's why it doesn't work that way. There's a society, there's a norm, and join it with the norms. Now, that means that even though technically you have a certain amount of leeway which way you're going to go with your customs, you could go with your wife's customs, and you don't have to accept a specific custom now. You could say, look, I'll go with Machon Meir for now, because this is where I'm learning. I'll go with the way they down, I'll go with their minagim. And as I learn more, eventually I'll decide on a specific minhag, and it doesn't have to be in a year or two, but it should be. It should be at some point, like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, so that you have a norm in your life. And that means you'll come to certain shuls and you'll be uncomfortable with the way they daven. Yes, that's what happens when you have a norm. When you go somewhere that's out of your norm, you'll be uncomfortable, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're Jews, we're Jews, they have their custom, we have ours. So when I get psicha at a Sephardi shul, I'm always wondering, when am I supposed to do this? Okay, I grab a Sephardi sitter and I start looking. They do things in a different order than we do. Fine. But even though technically, yes, you have leeway when it comes to the customs, but practically, you should go with one way. If, for whatever reason, you got used to Nusach Sephard, and you marry a Yemenite wife and you move up to Rosh Ayin where everyone's Yemenites, but you have a very hard time switching back from Nusach Sephard, so okay, you'll talk to your rabbi. There's room to take one or two points and say, okay, this is what I'm used to, this is where I'm sticking. So long as it's like minor points. But on the major things, you should really stick to one way so that when your kids go to school, they know who they are and they don't have identity crises like many people whose parents are Chozrim B'Tshuva and Geirim. I mean, the kids walk away very confused. What kind of home am I coming from? And they have a hard time identifying and connecting. So I once spoke to a group of Olim, and I told them that's one of the big challenges, and they weren't Chozrim B'Tshuva or Geirim. I told them that's one of the big challenges of every Olim. We come here to Israel, and this is without the religious factor, and we look at the Israelis and we say, wait a second, why is everything so polarized? I can respect the person that wears a black yarmulke and a knitted yarmulke and white shirt and colored shirt. And back in the States or in Canada or in Europe, we all got along. We all worked together. Why does everything have to be so extreme? You do serve an army, you don't serve an army. I'll serve an army, they won't serve an army. I can respect them, they could respect me. But when your kids grow up and everyone, all of society is different than your own home, so there's an aspect where they walk away confused. Oh, so my parents don't care so much about what's going on here? They don't know how many sacrifices you guys made in order to get here. What they see is, my neighbors, they go to the protest rallies. My neighbors' parents, they participate in a million things that are part of being Israeli. And my parents, well, they barely did the army, and they barely understand me, and they don't know what I'm going through, and that's a challenge every Ole has. You guys have that plus. So we got to minimize. So where we can, we got to strive for the norm. And I say this all year long. And I still end up with stories like that guy. And that was a guy who was here about 4 years. That was a guy who heard it from me many times. Okay, it's up to you guys to implement it in your lives. And every Chozer B'Tshuva, like we discussed 2 weeks ago, everyone, when they do Tshuva, it stems from a uniqueness, a strength, a personality. And that personality wants to find expression. And sometimes the way people find expression is by doing things that are unusual. And it's not good. It's not good. They're hurting themselves. We have to find expression in other venues. Let's be unusual in the chesed way we do. Let's find unusual ways to do mitzvot. But let's not be unusual in a way that draws attention and that causes people to be confused about who we are. It's okay, we discussed this 2 weeks ago. On this point, there's something else. Yeah?
So if I came here to Makom Meir, I'm also a zero tshuva, but I already picked up a number of customs from previously. Do I have an obligation and permission and or the obligation to switch to Makom Meir's customs?
Technically, we assume that as you're learning, you're not really accepting customs. You're learning customs. The assumption is that until you had this class and now you understand that there's a time when you learn and there's a time when you accept, until now you just did what everyone else was doing. The assumption is you didn't sit down and think, gee, there's this custom and that custom and I'm going to do this. I assume you didn't. You knew. Right. So you just did by default what they did. That's not called accepting a custom. That's called, I did by default what my locale did, and that doesn't obligate you. And my advice to you guys is, be slow before you accept customs, but do. Meaning, don't do it today, you just got here, but don't wait 10 years. There has to be a point when you do. And don't push that point off saying, well, I still have to choose. I mean, what's more important to me? Having kicked me off?
I'm more confused than one of us when before I asked the question. You're saying that it's better to actively choose your own customs?
No, I'm saying you can adopt Machon Meir's customs, you could adopt Ashkenazi customs, you could adopt a certain route, and better a route that's more defined. I'm saying, but the fact that a person was chozer b'tshuva by Chabad, let's say, so now he's obligated to wear Chabad tefillin his whole life, he's obligated to do everything Chabad do? No. He started learning by them, that was his default custom. As he learns more and he discovers there are other customs, so being that he doesn't have a tradition, he will have to choose who he's going to go with. It could be Chabad, could be Satmar, could be Bells, could be standard Ashkenazi, could be Dutch Ashkenazi. Whatever you choose, it should be something which you hopefully have a rabbi who could help you out with knowing what to do in that. And preferably something where you could see a whole community that does it. So it's not all theoretical, and you have other people you could be with who do it. The best thing to choose is something which there are many people who do. Meaning, if you choose to go through Avadia Yosef's rulings. So you have quarter of a million people in Israel who are doing his rulings or more. Yeah, so it's easy to find a rabbi who can guide you what to do in that. You choose, like guys here sometimes do, the customs of Saloniki. Okay, find someone who knows that. The customs of an island in Greece. Okay, how many Jews are on that island? All 75. Who knows what their customs are? Well, there was once a book written about it. To each his own, I respect it. But at the end of the day, how is he going to find out his customs? So that's why it's good when you're choosing customs, you should choose a community which is still alive and vibrant and has rabbis and hopefully has books which can guide you. You choose Moroccan customs, you have books that can tell you what your custom is. You choose standard Ashkenazi, you have books. You choose something far out, you're going to have a hard time. But again, it's not that you're choosing this custom, that custom, and another custom. Choose a whole set. This is the community I'm going with. You with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Question.
Yeah.
So the question is,
is it on this point?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
In the sense of convenience and reality, foreseeing my future in some degree. I know we've discussed this before, like that. I foresee myself, Zot Hashem, marrying a Sephardi woman, living inside some type of Sephardi community. So, but since I'm not at that point, I'm doing that. I just see that like as much more realistic than not, just in my mind. I really do. So, in that sense, it seems like you said when you're raising children that the children are raised with one way. His mother is Sephardi Yemeni, so the father follows that too, and the child wakes, goes up like that in the community. So, what I'm saying is that at that point, since I'm not there yet. Should I just wait until then to formally accept a custom, and then until then just try to conform to some generality of what's going on around me? Because the idea is I I don't want to be the only person in like this Sephardi community who's like following Ashkenazi stuff, and my children are now confused because their little kids are all, you know, going. So I'm saying the sense of reality, like, it doesn't bother me that that's just how it's going to be. So I'm saying at this point, though, that's not my full reality. So
I would start learning it. You can't learn it in a day.
Right.
And if you could, starting to practice the things that won't seem unusual. That's the path you want to go, so
right.
Start learning it.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll take a long time. It's not easy.
Right. And the unusual things that you're learning is stuff like that.
So wait on those. Don't stand out in the Machon Meir.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Brett, I'm like...
Yeah, and choosing a custom, what are like the top priorities you should be concerned with? You know, like davening and like
no, practical.
What?
Practical.
Everything. I mean,
davening is less critical, actually.
Okay.
Because davening, which nusach you go with, they're all okay.
Yeah.
It's more a question of which one you'll manage with. Meaning,
yeah.
Which community you'll be in. All nusachot are okay. All legitimate nusachot, orthodox. So then the question arises, well, what about other anachot? Which halachot you mean? Which halachot are so important?
Yeah, because I mean, when it comes to my mind, I'm thinking like, all right, Pesach, rice. I mean, to me though, that seems kind of trite. Though, I mean, I feel like there should be more.
There is all of Shulchan Aruch is Sfardi, Ashkenazi, Mechaber,
okay.
Ramah, Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, Shesulis. All of Shulchan Aruch is that way.
Okay.
In most areas, there are differing opinions is in customs. A person has to think which community he's going to end up in, and then try to work that way. That's the more practical way.
Okay.
Chances are you'll be in an Anglo community or an English Ashkenazi community. So if that's the case, then that's the direction you should be learning. You shouldn't spend time now learning the Sephardi chant for Slichos. Again, practical, not so much halachic. You could say Slichos with the Sephardi all month long. Chances are you'll end up being with Ashkenazim, so better you take the time between now and Matzei Shabbos, start learning a little bit about what we're going to be saying from Matzei Shabbos through Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Go to Ashkenazi davenings on Rosh Hashanah.
How different is like Sephardi from Ashkenazi?
I'm not talking about Nusach Sephardi,
okay.
We're talking about Sephardim.
No,
Ashkenazim.
I understand that.
So there are many things that are different.
Okay,
I mean, let's take this month. So this month they wake up early, we don't. It encompasses halacha, it also encompasses social norms.
I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm confused there. I'm just saying, I'm not talking about Sephardi. I'm talking about, like, you know, like, Mudavin, there's...
No, so Sephard...
We have here Sephard.
Ah, so that's not a big deal. That's not a big difference.
Okay.
Sephard and Ashkenaz.
Okay.
That's not a big deal. I'm talking about Sephardi.
Yeah,
Ashkenaz.
Okay. Exactly.
No, Sephard and Ashkenaz doesn't matter.
Okay.
I mean... Now those I'll say short matters, gotta go Sephard. And now those I'll say short matters, gotta go Ashkenaz. I mean, but being that there are big opinions on both sides, and
yeah.
I don't mean to mock either one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm smaller than all of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whichever way you go, you have Luther or line. Yeah.
Off topic.
If it's off topic, so wait. Anything else on topic?
I got something.
Yeah.
A quick feel comfortable davening Ashkenazi just because I grew up davening Ashkenazi, just how I remember, but in every other sense I've been practicing the traditions of Sephardi just in the sense of doing things halachically in the holidays and stuff like that, just because I'm trying to practice for when I said it. The problem is that transitioning into davening Sephardic, like I don't mind it, I'm just saying, I'm just comfortable just like...
I don't think it's critical. Just so you know your way around in the Sephardi davening, so that you'll be able to help your kids when they're in shul.
Okay.
But davening is specifically the place where people put the most stress. That's where I get the most questions, and that's technically the least important.
Okay.
Technically, it doesn't really matter if you're davening Sephard, Ashkenaz, Sephardi, Ari. Doesn't really matter. They're all legitimate nuschot, and that's where your children will feel it the least. Because they're going to learn that in school and they're going to do that in shul, and that's where what you do has the least impact on your children. But you should learn the tunes for kiddush. You should learn the things which is where your children will feel.
The Shabbat songs.
Right, the
Shabbat
songs.
Shabbat songs much more than Ashkenaz at all.
On topic or off topic? Yeah, Yehuda.
When you're davening, like, so let's say you daven Ashkenaz and you're in a Sephardi minyan.
So wait, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very practical question for now, almost now. In the shul upstairs, you daven in the midst of Sephardi and Ashkenazi, right?
So wait, that's not this. We'll get to that, but then David comes first. It's not husband and wife. Two different customs. One second, one at a time. We're with you, David. Go ahead.